Hey guys, it's Johnny P again. And after much delay and cruel tease, Cecil Scott, he of CWF's color commentary team, or announced team, he being the color commentary, however you want to say it, Cecil Scott's on the show this week. I had a great conversation with Cecil at his place. We talked about how he got into CWF. We talk about how he transitioned from the ring to the announce desk. We talk about his relationship to Brad Stutz. There's some interesting nuggets in there about live commentary versus post-produced commentary. And we finish up talking about what the goals of commentary should be. It's a really fun conversation. I really appreciate Cecil. Cecil is a great friend who saved my butt many times while I was down there. So it's really cool to sit and talk with him. So I hope you guys enjoy it, and I'll see you after this. My next special guest on my road trip, I have a man who I almost killed twice in the last 2 hours since I've been awake, but who also let me sleep till 11 o'clock because I couldn't sleep well last night.
Yeah.
And he's notable because he came out of retirement recently, but you know him as the other half of the great voices of CWF Mid-Atlantic. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Cecil Scott.
Hey, John. How you doing, buddy?
Okay. I just had some Biscuitville.
Yeah, it was delicious. The pork chop biscuits.
Being a Northeasterner, I'm in on Biscuitville, but I was leery of the pork chop biscuit. But now I'm piqued my curiosity. So first question would be, tell me about your transition to being an announcer.
Oh, the transition kind of is gone for a few years. Back when I was still active, I did a little commentary here and there. Back before we were, you know, kind of religiously putting out all our content for consumption and everything. And everybody always said, yeah, you're pretty good at it, you know. But it wasn't really a serious thing just because we didn't use commentary that much. And around 2012, I started getting a lot more serious about it. And I kind of knew that my in-ring career was winding down just through injuries and just feeling really haggard all the time and everything. And it's just kind of one of those things where I just kind of realized, okay, my future is kind of in the booth besides the ring. And me and Brad just had a conversation one day. Brad Stutz, by the way, just for people listening. We just had a conversation. I said, hey, I think I'm better off serving the company behind the booth than I am in the ring. And for all intents and purposes, I retired in 2013 as a wrestler.
We can go with the gender-neutral Stutzy for this.
Yeah.
How did you... So I know, because months ago you and I talked after, I think, Battle Kid. So I know you didn't train at CWF. How did you find CWF?
Well, I always say that they were the ones that trained me, quote-unquote, correctly. I originally trained with the Maestro from WCW, Rob Kellum, who's... I rib him a lot. I haven't spoken to him in years, but me and Brad Stutz like to rib him. He's a great, great guy, though. I trained with him, and I lived in on the East Coast at the time and moved to Greensboro years later. And I want to say I saw a newspaper article about CWF. And I just saw that, okay, there's wrestling in the local area, and I was wanting to get back in the ring. And I went to one of their shows, and I spoke to a gentleman named Danny Winkle, who a lot of people know as William Cross, on-air character. He's Andrew Everett's father. And he kind of...
In real life.
Yeah, real life father. Yeah. But we spoke, and he said, okay, this is where we train and everything. And I hadn't been in the ring in probably 2 years at that point. So I more or less got retrained by Jeff Rudd, who you know as Coach Gemini. And the Kamikaze Kid, and they got me back into shape and taught me a lot of things. And that's, I always say that's where my career really started.
You're like one half of arguably, at least internet-wise, within the bubble that I exist within, because there's about 40 of them. But within like the older heads, you guys are pretty much, you and Stutz are pretty much the dream team of commentary. How did that, what's the process as far as organic versus like directives, like how much do you go in knowing, does Stutzy produce you at all? Did that evolve over time?
It honestly was just kind of like a natural chemistry that evolved. I mean, there's always like your production notes and stuff like that, you know, where it's like, okay, we need to talk about this or this or hit this beat. But otherwise, it's so unscripted and so loose. Like, Brad will have his beats that he wants to hit, and thankfully, he trusts me enough to just kind of follow along and, you know, kind of go and then add my own spin to it. And he's always trusting me to just kind of do the right thing and say the right things.
Have you now? You guys do commentary live.
Yeah,
and in fact, live. You know, I think I mentioned on Stutzy's interview that I like sitting like right next to the booth,
right?
Because I get like live commentary with it.
I get that from a lot of people, actually.
It's awesome. It's like way worth, like, by the way, guys, it's like $10 or $15 to do that.
Yeah.
In the Northeast, to get a crappy seat at a show is like $25. So do that. Come down to Gibsonville. I guess, well, number one, you had mentioned like production notes. What's the match where you had the most notes? And number two, have you ever had a night where you just didn't have, like, maybe a match where you just kept stumbling? Like, he kept giving you openings for something and you were like falling over your words?
I know that's happened. It's hard for me to pinpoint an example, but I'm pretty sure early on, before I found my groove, there were a lot of cases where it's like either I didn't know enough about the guys in there or something along those lines. It's hard to think of an example of where I just kept just blowing.
It's probably openings. A good thing.
Yeah.
The fact that you're going to go, oh, yes, this is the match.
But as far as having the most beats to hammer home, it was honestly the 105-minute Trevor Lee Roy Wilkins match. Mm-hmm. Because there were so many stories interwoven in this, and we were talking about it last night where you asked me if I like to go in cold and not know anything about the matches. That's one of those where, unfortunately, I had to know a little bit more about it than I wanted to. I just didn't know how long they were going
to
go.
You had a lot of time to fill. At some point, did you kind of feel like, and I know this is a leading question, but did you feel during that match or any match where it went further than you thought and you went, man, I really information dumped everything. Now it's just flat out like calling things. And Stutzy's, see, you're in a position to extrapolate further upon this. Stutzy's mostly doing color, play-by-play, right. And you're doing color. So have you ever hit a wall where you go like, I don't know what I'm adding here?
I think there were a couple of times in that match in particular where I'm like, I didn't feel like my performance was that great, but of course everybody watches the match and talks about, oh, the commentary made the match, and I do that a lot. I doubt myself sometimes, but yeah, I know there were times because in my brain, when I kind of got the idea they were going to go long before the match started, I'm thinking, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. They didn't know we were going 2 hours with this thing. So, like, a lot of the little points and stuff that I always try to make in a match, I had probably made them all within the first 45 minutes. And that was one of those situations that's a funny story I tell people, is that I almost had a very nasty emergency at the booth during that match. So,
do you ever feel pressure to either? I mean, Vince McMahon is famous for yelling at people in their headsets and overproducing them live, which I can't even imagine trying to work through. Do you feel pressure though at all, or have you? Do you have any system where you either feel internal pressure to lay out or not lay out, or kind of get a note from Stutzy slid across the desk from inches away?
Yeah. Well, you definitely have had moments like that. There have even been times where he has to tell me, shut the hell up. You know, he had to throw his hand up and be like, stop talking. Just because there'll be beats that I don't know that are coming in the match, and I'm still trying to make a point. And these guys tell me, hey, dude, like, doing the little wrap up signal, like, shut the fuck up. But a lot of little things like that, but he doesn't produce me that much. You know, obviously, unless there's just something he really needs me to hit or back off on.
I know, because I was at the Fan Fest, which is weirdly controversial online. Some people, like, loved it and found it so much fun, and some people felt like, well, that was just for the people there. They seemed like they were having fun, but it wasn't, like, broadcast worthy or something. And I'm kind of like, well, I go in the middle where I go, like, you could... A, it's not the end of the world either way, and I don't think anybody presented it as such, but I'm like, okay, well, maybe it shouldn't have been a worldwide, but I'm so glad they put it out. But the one thing, you know what I didn't like about that, because I loved the show when I was there live, is that I almost wanted no commentary. I wanted them to not put it out as a worldwide. It's just a YouTube special that wasn't kind of canon, so to speak. But you guys did post-production. You did,
yes.
The commentary was not done live. How often do you do non-live commentary where you have to like go into a quote-unquote booth?
I can only think of maybe 5 times that we've done it. There was one occasion where we filmed a show at like a downtown, like a festival thing in downtown Burlington. And it's actually where the famous footage of Noe Jose was going around talking to people, talking shit to people on the street. We did one there. The only time we've ever had to do it otherwise is when we had audio problems. We had some audio problems at a Chapel Hill show, and we had to go in and basically film, you know, 25 minutes of commentary and post-production for a match. And
how is that different?
Different is in...
Do you feel like... Okay.
As far as, like, the tone?
Yeah, well, this is kind of me projecting that I want to see, and so it'll turn into a question. Like, nothing drives me more crazy than... You have a really cool conversation or something happens organically as a creator and then you go, oh, we should record this. And then it's like, okay, so I'm going to ask you the same thing again. It just feels so fake, even though it's not the intention. Do you ever like find that out and go, well, now I'm just going to be trying to remember what I said the first time?
We did that. I remember specifically there was a Nick Richards versus Chris Lee match. And commentary just like the audio went out while we're recording and while we're filming the show. And we didn't know it until Grant is going back producing the show. So we came back, we went to Grant's house and did commentary again. And we're trying to hit the same points that we hit on the live commentary. And in some cases, it felt like you were trying to remember what you said versus an organic talking point. And post-production, otherwise, the big challenge is obviously... last time we did it, we were in the same room that you and I are in right now. Mm-hmm. And you'll hear the echo, and you can tell like, you're trying to be a little more subdued because you're not trying to disturb neighbors and things like that. Because Stutzy's a loud guy, so he's trying not to shout in someone's living room. So you get challenges like that where I always feel like post-production is very obvious usually.
So what you're saying is when we filmed today with the camera for Secret CWF Productions, it's going to be very echoey. All right, well, I want to end today by trying to do what we just sort of made fun of, but do anew. We had a nice conversation just hanging out watching a match last night, and we were talking about the goals of commentary for you guys versus like what we have had and what we know of from, because you and I are both old tape trader, like loving old territory stuff, and we recently just started talking a ton about 90s All Japan because of Twitter fans.
And Davey Boy Smith, apparently.
Yes, which is, there's a resurgence of Davey. I didn't know he was that good, ever. I believe Bret Hart. So talk to me about putting that together and what kind of what the goals are and what you want the commentary. What are the things you want people to come up and say to you about the commentary? Where they go, this is what I got out of it. And you're like, yes, that's it.
The biggest compliment I think I get from anybody is if they watch a match and they say, yeah, the match was pretty good, but I feel like the commentary added a whole other layer to it that I wouldn't have gotten otherwise. What we did added something that they wouldn't have otherwise picked up on their own. Instead of forcing points or anything like that, like you see in some of the bigger companies in their commentary.
Okay, I'll add on. I know that was the last question, but this is just the addendum to that question.
Okay. It's a 1A.
It's a 1A. What are the points you're trying to hit on that you think other places had kind of moved away from, possibly because of the industry standards, which is WWE, really?
There's a few points I always try to hit. Obviously, it's trying to put over the damage and the rigors of the moves that they're supposed to convey and everything, you know? I think a lot of commentary has gotten away from analyzing the holds and why they work and, you know, why it hurts and, you know, so on and so forth. And a lot of that's because there's so few actual wrestlers in the booth or, you know, except for like, you know, you got your JBLs or whoever, but they're basically Vince's mouthpiece, you know. That and one thing that me and Brad both, it's like not even a conscious effort, but one of our big things is trying to take all of the pro wrestling tropes that are hard to explain without exposing the business, but like giving them a quote unquote kayfabe explanation. Things like talking about Trevor Lee doing the TNA tapings and doing all these matches in a week and turn around saying, okay, that's why most TV matches only go a few minutes because you're wrestling 15 times in a week, you know?
Tired, mental lapses.
Yeah, it's things like that.
Just so detail work.
Yeah, taking all the tropes and trying to give them a pro wrestling explanation versus a quote-unquote smart mark or business exposing kind of explanation, you know?
Okay. All right. Thanks, Cecil.
No problem, dude. Anytime.
Maybe tomorrow we'll just do part two. Maybe we won't. That's a tease.
That is a tease.
Because I have no idea.
I don't even know who's going to hear this.
I don't either.
was my conversation with my pal Cecil Scott. I want to thank Cecil again because he's a great man, and also because he didn't kill me when I put sugar on grits down at SCI. He did expose me to the world, but I can forgive him, as he has forgiven me for my transgressions. So listen, next week we are not going to have a traditional episode, because next week I'm taking a 30-minute excerpt of a very long conversation had at the Great Bar Mother Tucker's between a, we'll call him a high-ranking CWF official you may have heard early on in this series, and a CWF fan who is notable for many things, including, mostly, writing about pro wrestling for decades. Really interesting conversation, and I just turned the recorder on, and they just went. So I will see you next week with that.